Welcome to the latest edition of the OmniTalk Spotlight Series, the series that highlights the people, the companies, and the technologies that are shaping the future of retail. I'm one of your co-hosts for today, Chris Walton.
And I'm Ann Mazenga.
And today we have the pleasure of talking with someone we've known since his first debut as a startup on the Shop Talk stage. And for today's conversation, we'll be discussing the ever-evolving world of pricing. More specifically, what this gentleman thinks retailers are doing right and what they could be doing better when it comes to their pricing strategies. So with that, we'd like to introduce Alex Halkin, the CEO and founder of Competera. Alex, welcome to OmniTalk. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Annie, for inviting me. I'm a big fan of your podcast and so excited to be here finally.
Yeah, Alex, it's really exciting to have you on. I mean, I remember being on stage with you when Competera was like just kind of coming onto the scene, and it's been really fun to watch as things have developed over the past several years that we've been following your work. And so I'd love, before we get started, to just kind of give the audience a little bit of your background, and then we can go into kind of the backstory of Competera, if you don't mind.
Yes, super. Thank you. Yeah, just long story short, I'm an engineer, born and raised in Ukraine, and my actually diploma was electronic nose that I built it. I trying to train computer to smell, and what? It was not really work.
I have no idea about that. Really?
A computer can smell. Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We're still not there yet, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Right.
And just imagine, I used the neural networks back 2005. It was actually 7 years before Google acquired distributed neural networks. I started thinking about AI. Right now, we see that Pachai said, Google is not a search company. Google is an AI company. Mm-hmm. But I'm really a long time with this.
What were you trying to solve for, Alex? Like, what was the impetus for trying to get a computer to have a sense of smell?
It was a part of the diploma work. Actually, I'm having a diploma as a medical engineer. Technically, I study computer science and med tech science. But back to like 2000s, it was really basic stuff. Yeah. And then, long story short, was like a lot of experience of building the products as an outsourcer. And then I was actually hunted by Deloitte. And I used to work with Deloitte Digital for like auditing a lot of projects. And actually, this was a part of the teams who was focusing on pricing advisory for brands and retailers globally. And guys, I see how like huge room of analysts spending hours on doing the pricing adjustment using elasticity and Excels, of course. And, and this is something like click in my head saying, cool, this is probably super inefficient. And of course, the cost of this is very expensive and very slow. Like we can recalculate the prices like around 6 months and we can do it maybe faster, but it's still like very, very expensive. And then again, my background, I think, okay, cool. Probably machine learning can figure out what to do here. And actually it was the rise of cloud as well. And just think probably we can combine this like machine learning, rise of cloud, and knowledge how pricing should be done. And this is when we started. Technically it was 2014 when I first time get this to my mind. But also the good story to tell that is was quite impossible. Before those cloud, the compute cost was so insane, guys.
Right.
And I came to the customer, I can't mention, but it was a huge groceries in London.
Okay.
And I said, guys, look, you doing this 700 product was done with our analyst team for them manually. I said, look, I can do it all, but on the shelves, it was around 17,000 items. I said, cool, guys, I can do it on 17,000 item size on the weekly basis. And pay me the same amount as you paid for this, guys. Guess what they said?
No idea. Course. You tell us what they say.
They said, no way. Like, you should be 10 times better and 4 times cheaper. And it was cool. Of course, we shake their hands because what you have as a startup, any chance, right? And
right.
I made a business. The first thing I took, it was around £300,000 we agreed on. And I paid Google $260 from this money. It's like, cool, nice business. I made a great business for Google. But the things evolved too much. And from 2014, we actually start training the model, making this data lake. You know that AI is not only about science, it's all about data labeling, structuring, and saving. Why I really big believer that Tesla autonomous vehicles is most advanced, because they start collecting data 2008 and start making all this stuff right. And in 2017, late 2017, we finally got the model with optimal margin and what can really works and actually was affordable. And the second thing happens actually, thanks for blockchain. Why? Because most of the cloud providers since 2016 switched to GPUs instead of CPUs. As a huge change happens in terms of like AI getting closer and closer to us. If you know, like again, famous OpenAI also started in 2014.
Yes.
They started with researchers. But yeah, this big thanks for actually blockchain and the first glance that they made those calculations cheaper. Still is expensive. We have also a few customers who can't even guys calculate the cost for them. That is still like some limitations in this space. So, sorry for the long answer background, but
no. So help me understand. So how does blockchain play into what you're doing with pricing then? Explain that for the audience.
Okay, great. That the mining process. When you did the mining, you did on the GPUs, right? On graphic processors, not CPUs, because it started there but shifted there, and it was a huge adoption for the video cards, right? And there was a huge shortage on the whole market. And this is reality, I don't remember, 16, 17, where the cloud providers switched to the GPUs globally, Google, Amazon, everyone. Right. Yeah, and this is coming to AI space. And you see right now, we're expecting NVIDIA just announced a few days ago, the new type of chip would be even more productive. And I hope the compute will go down because AI is everywhere right now.
So switch to GPUs essentially helped you because you get more processing then? Mm-hmm. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah, the margin gets right because we even spoke with the second biggest retailer right now in the world. And they said, guys, we're really worrying that how much it would be in compute. And and this really works me as well on their side. It's still like, but it works. And this is most important.
So Alex, explain for me then, like, how are you approaching this then with some of the retailers that you've been talking to? Like, how did you go from 17,000 SKUs with a grocer in the UK to now expanding this up as the compute power allows for faster processing, but then also as Computer has kind of developed?
I mean, honestly, it's still like since last year, also that I always think I'm super grateful for two things in the world. The first one, blockchain due to GPU shift, and second one to Sam Altman, who make the AI something what people really start trust in. And, you know, it's still like good to know, like from 2018, when we officially announced it, start working on that publicly, and Computer actually was registered in late 2017, like November. All the customers who used us, they still with us. We have 100% logo retention since then. When they tried, they stick with this and saying, Alex, we can't imagine we can do it like any again manually, or like 50, 30 people was involved in this pricing, and the big assortment now is one, two people just needed.
Wow.
Yeah. And but still for me, even now it's hard to convince, really hard. Like because or they can't evaluate, or all the cars look the same for the customers. And honestly, the big companies who in this market for 30 years, they was really hard pitching against us. Oh, this is a black box. And it's why now we will touch this point maybe later, that we're using like contextual machine learning. It means that we can interpretate why price was changed and what was the reason behind. But it was really hard to convince, be honest. Like, oh, the startup from the Europe, especially in the United States, is really hard also.
Right. So Alex, so strip it back for us right now. Let's kind of reset the conversation a little bit too. Like, what fundamentally in like one or two sentences is the value proposition of Computera that you tell retailers?
We actually say that, guys, we can help you to price beyond elasticity.
Okay.
It means that we can bring the optimal price hyperlocal, what will be optimal in the eyes of your customers. And of course, we'll make your margin. And our average customer, like average number of the improvement is a 6% gross profit improvement without losing any revenue targets. Just imagine how big this impact for retailers is, like, is insane. And Alex, it sounds too good to be true, but it's true. And I will say that trust us, not trust us, just test us. Give me a few categories, 5 stores and 6 weeks time, and you will see it.
Okay. Got it. Well, it sounds like, and it sounds like we've got the right person for this conversation, because he's got a nose for AI, pun intended.
Yes.
And to that point, Alex, like, pricing is definitely a lever. Like, it's probably the biggest lever to drive demand that retailers have for the most part. And so, you know, we've talked a lot on our show about the importance of AI pricing, but like we said, you're the expert here. You're the guy with the nose for what it means. Why do you feel it's important for retailers to embrace an AI based approach to pricing?
Yeah, again, this is now a very modern world with everyone giving the names of their AI. We don't have it. We still call it like version 15, because like my engineer passed not giving names for the algorithms. I don't know. That's a crazy
15
trend.
15 children to name is too many. Yeah, you just have to go to numbers at that point.
V15. And you know, that is the only reason, actually, guys, why I started, because when I saw those software, they technically was relatively quick to deliver the new price from technically Excel on steroids. I mean, that they was care about price automation, how to bring the new price to the store, when actually reason for repricing was the cost change or competitors. Technically, the reactive pricing. We always do changes when something is already happens, but this is not how you win the world. And with the vision, how I had that moment to say, I need to make the price proactive. It means that for me, competitor is not a trigger. Competitor is a factor. And okay, we have now around 20 factors, including like store location, day of the week, weather, dependent items on the shelf, promotion happening in that particular store, or if that store data set is small, maybe this cluster of the stores. And of course, the customer behavior on, for example, the Target store in the middle of Manhattan is a different from even Target store in the middle of the Las Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. But usually we have the same pricing. We actually also touch a lot of topics on your podcast about the personalization is a huge topic, many, many years. But come on, I know like how most of the, we just recently launched the research regarding the price index, like price maturity of the retailers in the United States. And it's a disaster, guys. They're still like very, very outdated. And what we can say about personalization if we treat the customer in the middle of Las Vegas the same as the middle of Manhattan? What I don't even say that is a different state taxes between Nevada and New York, right?
That's an interesting point. I've never thought about there's differences in taxes, which would impact your differences in pricing across the states too. I've actually,
buying power is different. Why everyone knows that we need to do something different in online comparison to offline. Mm-hmm. But for us, by the way, online is that's just a channel. The same, like for me, is like if you have 100 store and online is 101 store, because online different behavior, different buying power, different actually the way of consumption, etc. This is what AI technically enables us. We have no limits. We can bring the optimal price in a different context. Now everyone finally knows that prompting, right? The context. This is why I call it this contextual ML. Technically, that we give the algorithm, hey, this is your context. This is a store of middle of nowhere. This is like someone, people coming here back and forth. Here's a shelf. Here's my stock. Here's my promotion plans. And here's my actually digital my marketing spend for that store. This all the context, all the data, what we can input to the algorithm and say, hey, please. And what I need, of course, I say, hey, cool. I need better profit and please keep my revenue. Or I want revenue growth, but be not so hard on margins, or don't care about margins. And then I can calculate your optimal price position, and they can do it every day, every week.
How often you want, right?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, that's the thing, right? Yep.
Well, and Alex, explain a little bit where the consumer comes into this too, like as a factor alongside the things that you were just talking about. I mean, consumers are paying close attention, especially like I always think of when we have discussions about pricing on here, I think of things like eggflation and like some of the key items in the store that are really key drivers for consumers when they're making a decision about where they're going to shop and how. Like, how do things like that factor into this for the retailers that you have worked with?
You know, do we want honest answer or
we don't want honest, candid answers, Alex. No, that's not our reputation at all.
You know, I really can be really honest with you. Retailers don't really care much about the end consumers. It can be controversial, but what I have I seeing is they so hard and so far from them. I call this a fifth level of, for me, sorry, we got this with the Gartner. We made like five levels of the price maturity. And the third level is exactly the where you can use the machine learning or demand based pricing with the forecast technically make your pricing proactive, not reactive. But they still, guys, consider only the product behavior, store, all this stuff. The customer technically is like approximate metric about around the traffic and the consumption curve. That we know the X by the X consumption looks like that, the avocados like that. This customer technically is not in the formula. And by the way, optimization targets is not there. All the retail optimization targets, sorry, especially for the public companies about gross profits, about margin, is not optimizing for customers, sorry. And the fifth level of growth, we call this where And the cluster is usually the store, as we mentioned, the store location, the group of the stores, group of the products. And a fifth level, we call this personalized contextual pricing, like where optimization target became LTV. Mm-hmm. And only one retailer in United States, as far as I know, who doing that today. And you never guess who is it. As a company, you know it. It's like Fortune 5.
Fortune and it's 5? Not It's not happening or it is happening?
It's not Apple and not
Apple. It's not Apple. Okay, well, can you tell us? Tell us who it is.
Google. Google stores. We spoke very often and the guy saying they just imagine that you can calculate LTV with a certain level of the accuracy. And he said, guys, we know this small cluster of these people will spend with us next 60 months. I don't know actually why 60, but something like 60 months, this amount of money. And just imagine how you can really price your product knowing that. By the way, in the gaming industry, all this they already in gambling and gaming, they know it and they calculate it very well. Mm-hmm. And that we can learn from them because they, first of all, care about customer behavior and clusters and do the price adjustment based on behavior and actually prediction of this customer willing to pay. Retail has a lot of limitations starting from the manufacturer cost, the blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of limits, but the good news, we're having right now one customer doing this fifth level of growth, and this is, guys, dark stores. Guess what? They don't have we call it price discrimination trap, where how to deliver differentiated price to the end user. You need to run this like kind of shopping or cards, etc. And it's why the mobile native retailers, the dark stores, they have this ability, right? They just having app. And right. They didn't have a web store. And that's why they can really do very cool personalized pricing. Is it two problems then? Yeah. But
it's good though, but it's good because what you're touching on is a little bit of kind of the nirvana that, man, we were talking a lot more about it 5 or 6 years ago than we have recently. And, but you know, the analogy to the casino industry and knowing, you know, exactly what your customer is and how much they're going to spend and what the propensity is that they're going to spend money with you, given all the different factors that are at play. And so Alex, what makes that such a difficult challenge for retailers to approach their business in that manner?
First of all, data foundation, still fun. Data is not there. And mostly, I thought, guys, when we found the computer, I thought I will spend more time on model training for each retailer in different contexts, in different industries.
Yeah.
We're spending more time on data clearance, guys, and transformation still. Even retailers buying like Snowflakes, Google, but you know, they still like, sorry, but rule the garbage in, garbage out. They bought the big tables, but they're still putting their garbage. And to make the pricing on the customer level, just imagine the complexity and the size of data set. But this the future is really bright. And I see this adoption is coming. But data foundation is the main blocker from making the price, like targeting, for example, LTV and some specific micro group of users. By the way, you know, in America, we don't have a GDPR, right? But in Europe, we have. And I think, honestly, the GDPR is not something bad. I still think that we don't need to overconsume data because it's actually not right. And even right now, design that the price should be tailored for some specific mini group of users. It's like, okay, that is like, looks like this is still a group, is a cohort, is not individual. Like for individual, the marketing can do some like marketing touch, but in the global adoption, it's still, so Chris, this is a data foundation. What even huge retailers, multi-billion dollar retailers really, really bet on that.
Got it. So, Alex, let me ask you a question then, like, because you got me thinking about this. Like, if that's the nirvana and those are the roadblocks, does the approach you're espousing lend itself more to retailers that have smaller assortment sizes? I'm thinking like QSRs, for example, where they have just like, you know, 5, 6, 7 items on the menu versus like a Walmart or a Target that probably has 100,000 SKUs. Am I correct in thinking about that in that manner, or is that where we'll see the adoption first towards this type of thinking from a retail perspective? Like, what's your thoughts there?
You know, the fun fact that for small retailer or the big retailer, it can be the same problems on their side. I mean, the data foundation, the same is like, again, with the, it's just a question of the compute. We can share the screen, but maybe afterwards I will show you what we did just in Gmail for Amazon and Shopify sellers. It's like McKinsey kind report coming generated completely by AI in 2 hours coming to your inbox. And for us, like, they're exactly example. Like, is usually the average Amazon seller is like sell 5, 7 items private label. Mm-hmm. I don't take these drop shippers into account. They're not retailers. They're just traffic gamblers. I don't know what to say. Yeah. But this is about what the advice for the listeners can say, guys, if you thinking about investing in the data, please do. I think still some retailers considering building products internally, build the data, is the data information regarding the customer, their behavior. This is your main product. And then you can buy and plug in any other vendor specific for pricing, for promo, for assortment. But your product is data, clear, cool data, what can be transferred anyway and be easy acceptable. If you can say that, if you wish, like your personal data lake. And this is something what retailers just, even if we know all this big data boom was in beginning of 2015, 14, but then BI, then people realized that BI is useless because someone need to look on these dashboards. And now there's a new era. As I all call it this era, like AI eating software, right? You don't need another tool, another SaaS coming every morning, Chris. Like, we even sometimes like Gmail or inbox is too much.
Yeah.
And we're living in a nice era that the software will disappear. Yeah, this AI will work. Yeah.
Well, I know that's the question Anne has for you too, because when we were talking about this beforehand, you know, like for me, it was like, okay, because there's the business intelligence side, which is basically what you just talked about. Like, we can run a McKinsey report that used to take months to put together. We can do it in 2 hours, I think is what you said, right? And I'm a big believer in that. But Anne, I know you've got, when you were talking to me before, you've got a lot of questions on like, okay, that's one thing. But then when you start talking about acting on the pricing intelligence.
Yeah, what to do with it.
Yeah, like that's your question, right? So
yeah, I mean, yeah, Alex, I think understanding, first of all, for the audience who's listening, we went through the very complex process of sorting through the data that you're getting in. But now, like, some retailers are still only updating prices once a year. Like, now they have this information, they're only able to get through that data to update prices once a year, you told me. How is that possible, first of all? And second, like, you know, what can AI and ML come in to do and Competeer come in to do that can shorten this process for retailers and really make it tangible for them? Because this can be really overwhelming, I think.
Any, honestly, still like for a lot of them is overkill saying, oh, we need to review our, some retailers still printing those magazines and they sell it through the paper magazines.
Yeah, right.
And I think my opinion, this train is already moving, or you're jumping or you stay. There's no other option, and they need to adopt. They need to see that again. And you see, this all is honestly made by Big Four. I was one of the team who also made the statement like dynamic pricing and not something good. I never say like dynamic pricing. I say, again, it's a big difference between price optimization and dynamic pricing. I think price review, it doesn't mean change of the price. We all know that Amazon reviewing their prices every 15 minutes, but it doesn't mean they change the price every 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as we made it twice touch the McKinsey. And when I was Deloitte, the customer called me and said, hey, Alex, can we keep like $4.99 for milk or not? I say, yeah, keep it is the best price. This advice stay is also advice.
Yeah.
You know, and I think retail shouldn't afraid and to do these adjustments faster. But honestly, they even not mentioned, but they do because cost is changing. When it was crazy inflation times, and it helps technically to them thinking about, oh, cool, we should be more reactive here. And any back to your question.
Yeah, what do they do here? Like, what's the approach they can take? How do they shorten that timeline?
First of all, the main blocker is the people in any process and some biased position. And all the conversation what I had is all about, oh, we never change. For example, we're reviewing our KPIs last year or 6 months ago, the best case. It's okay, who is doing it? Okay, we did it with one of the consulting companies. Okay, I say, do you think that people, again, let's take the same example, we're all coming to Shop Talk this week. You think that is a KPIs in Las Vegas, the similar in grocery to KPIs in Manhattan? Probably not, right?
No.
But if you ask the Coca-Cola, they will say, of course, this is our key value item. This is a small bottle of Coca-Cola. And they right. In general, they right. But this have nothing to do with your store and that particular place, etc. Where sometimes the local brand or your private brands even looks better and more native to the local audience. Yeah, and this minds were like, start right asking right questions. Do we really need to stick to this biased position that we think we're doing right, or just try? And I will say, guys, let's just see what data say and how much gross profit we left on the table due to this position, due to this very, very slow price reaction.
So I want to make sure that's coming out. So you're basically saying that there's a lot of value in just the intelligence side, going back to the dichotomy here. There's a lot of value in the intelligence side because Anne's question is one thing, but the second part of that question, you know, can you change more regularly, is especially when you start talking about physical retailing, there's a cost to making changes. And so this idea of, you know, I can change my prices whenever I want to, at any point in the day, there's a cost to that. So like, how do you think of the balance between intelligence and then acting on it when there are real people that need to make those price changes, real signs that need to be printed, or maybe real shelf tags that need to be updated electronically, all of which has a cost? So like, where is the balance there in trying to manage that for retailers as they're thinking about this? Because pricing is definitely on their mind, but those are the things where heads are exploding right now, I'm sure, as they're listening to this conversation. Yeah, the executives listening, they're like, okay, I want to do this, but like, there's got to be a limit to it. So what advice do you have for them in that regard?
Good news. Even in the computer, we have the very small trigger saying we don't try to change something in terms of your labor cost. We say, okay, how many price tags you changing right now weekly? And usually retail change the weekly. And they say 400. And that's what happens. We're just giving the CI also prompt saying,
got it.
Give me 400 price changes. What gives me this gross profit lift? That's it. We will not change everything every day. It's changing only second.
So your operating structure stays the same week in and week out. That's a really smart approach. I like that. Okay.
Yeah, Ian. But we see how many, for example, especially when we're just starting, is a huge disbalance in the shelves. And even in retail of 7,000 items, probably I want to change around 2,000 in the first glance. But we limit there. And of course, ESL will help to adopt it. But honestly, again, EI is not want to change something if the context is not changed, or this index is what we calculated is not changed. They not play with the price. It means that the idea is to find the optimal place and stay as long as possible in this optimal place. It's how algorithm is never biased. It's not a human. They want to try to, what if, right? Or, oh, this guy's changed the price. I need to react immediately. They know it. These guys always do this, but they have a limited stock. And usually they go out of stock every Wednesday. And I will not react because it's no sense, because I will not grow my price any back.
That's good.
Yeah. And the answer is, don't need to do often. For example, for offline, we even stick for weekly updates. Can be even bi-weekly, but not recommend to go less because it's too long. AI don't getting any respond. They need to respond that retrain. Model is retrained. Right. You know, the ChatGPT retrained like twice a year.
Right.
Yeah, and it's super expensive. We do the same, but on the weekly basis. It means that we allow them to grab the context, including like traffic information, new store, location of your competitors. It should be updated at least weekly. It's best daily, amazing. But you're right, daily, no one will do it. It's expensive. But
so
yeah,
that's so that's a really good nugget that you're just saying that I want to make sure we put a pin in for the executives listening, because like, you're basically saying like, you should do this within your current operating model. You don't need to do more. And ideally, if I heard you right, then the potential output of this is that you're actually doing less price changes over time than more, and because you want the models to set in the correct manner. Is that right?
Yeah, this is the nature of algorithm to
Very
put
cool.
you in what you call optimal price and keep them as long as possible. That is, yeah. And honestly, we see historically a reduction of numbers of the price changes over the time.
Right.
Not increasing because they are already optimal. It's when you go to the gym and you became the in nice form and you're just keeping those form, right?
Right.
Yeah, right.
You're starting from a place that is more informed than just going week by week by week or month by month, based on, you know, what my competitors are doing, for example, or what the cost is for me as a retailer. I wonder if this is a very heady conversation for me, and I'm sure for some of the listeners as well.
I'm sorry,
but
maybe quite technical.
No, this is great. It's great. We're learning so much. I wonder if you can help in again, kind of going into what you're doing at Competera with a couple of case studies or examples.
We have a brand, I know that we can mention this. This is an LVMH company, it's Starboard. Okay. This is a cruise ships. And
okay.
We priced 42 cruise lines based, guys, on the destination point. And means that the AI challenge is that we know this is a premium or is a standard and where it's going. And the idea is, of course, to increase the consumption on the boat, not offshore.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you arrived in Paris, you need to continue shopping in our duty free, right? And on the liner. And of course the all this stuff, but yeah, that is a very cool setup. When there's 42, it's technically a shopping mall on the water, right?
Right. Yeah.
But we realized it is moving, and we crawled. We also collect a lot of data, right? It's like not. By the way, we not mentioned this, but ML not working only on the retail data. We collect a lot of data outside, like traffic information, price, competitor prices, weather, hyperlocal events.
Right.
Yeah, this combined in this data set. And it seems like your iPhone, when you're typing, yeah, you're getting this. If you will train only on your algorithm, Chris, maybe it will take 20, 30 years to get to the point that we can suggest you next board because it's too much, too little inputs.
Right.
And just imagine for us the challenge saying, okay, we collect data on the all destination points. We know what is going on, and algorithm know when the repricing happens overnight, because they usually shift at night, right? When you sleep, the ship is moving to the new location, and the prices also change. This is fun case study.
No, that's great. So I never thought about that either. I'm thinking about a lot of new things, Alex. This is great. So yeah, the floating shopping malls too. I've never thought about that either. But What's on the horizon for pricing? Like, do you have any predictions for where it's headed next?
No,
as
like
a science.
You touched this today. It's the personalized pricing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Make it more personalized, and especially you see this is Gen Zs. They're growing in absolutely personalized environment, and you see those. We right now see the rise of this TikTok shopping. Technically, the world is going backwards, right? Our grandmother sitting on the TVs and doing this shop on the TikTok.
Right. What's
the same
old is new again. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really booming. And this is something what I see even will be accelerate. And again, for the all retailers who really was afraid of that, people is ready. They giving this gamification experience everywhere. Mm-hmm. Of course, starting on the flight tickets, and it's coming to the retail as well. And again, I think in this environment where you also guys mentioned many times in your podcast that the labor cost increase, the inflation right now is better, but no one knows. I feel still like the market recession is coming, but just maybe it just was delayed because world is busy in other thing with the wars, with the COVID, and say, okay, let's wait at that, but they come. And even the small teeny retailers like groceries is most challenging industry from the gross margin perspective. They desperately need it because that is actually helps to make your price perception, because again, you create your price perception even without making the purchase, right? Because you come to the store, you see something like, for example, you love the cereals and it was destroyed by price of milk and you not bought cereals because milk was insane. And this is something what should be considered, and they need to be there. And yeah, this personalized pricing with adoption of SL and better data flow, and retail will use as more and more machine learning in different perspectives, not only for pricing, for promo optimization, for assortment is already there, right? And the replenishment stuff, etc. That
well, we yeah, I mean, really Alex, something that I've learned here throughout this conversation is that there are, which many people listening know, like there are so many more factors and inputs going into what ultimately determines pricing where we are right now, and even more that will come into play as we go into the future and you start to try to get even more personalized with your pricing offerings. You try to even do things to benefit your loyal customers over other customers that are just walking in. Like the complexity is only going to grow. So it makes a lot of sense that you would start to invest in a platform that can help you manage that, because it's certainly not going to be happening manually.
Yeah, exactly. That is, this we passed the world where the things was manual or just automation. Again, yeah. A lot of software guys, what we interact is about automation, but not about optimization.
Right.
Yeah, and of course we can create a nice wars when we do automation is also optimization, but not with that all the data what you have right now, you don't need to think anymore. Of course, you know you need. Actually, the fun that you not touch the point that, because I also hear it very often that, hey, you're doing this, you will, this is people will fire it. AI is replacing the jobs, but no one calculate how much AI create the new jobs, yeah. Right? And for us, they're saying, still human in place, as you can't work with ChatGPT alone, right? You need to prompt him properly,
yeah, right.
See mm-hmm. the future. And the, right now, the Frame human the will just pointing the directions and putting the guardrails and play with the guardrails. My users right now, they're just playing with the limits. Oh, what happens if I put limit like that or like that? And they still need to see and what is being, but they're not spending time. And we have this promotion, what we just launched. We're saying our mission is to actually unlock your time for more available things, and these available things, like you grab your kids from kindergarten earlier, because when are we sitting in Deloitte with the red eyes from 8 a.m. till late 2 a.m. at night to complete the repricing of this store? And I know how many all these merchants still doing that. It's insane. That's, again, guys, there's something more advanced than human brain exists. Yeah, and this already here. Yeah.
Well, on that note, we'll close it up. I mean, I think my brain hurts already. I mean, we've definitely got the expert on pricing here at a technical level, excuse me, unparalleled for this show. So Alex, if people want to get in touch with you, pick your brain, learn more, go in even more in depth for the super geeks out there about what we just talked about, what's the best way for them to do that?
Please follow me on LinkedIn. It's really close. I'm posting a lot of stuff. We're actually preparing like a webinar for A/B testing in pricing. We will show the different ways of testing, like how we need to be sure that you're doing the right things. Mm. Also, we all coming to Shop Talk. We'll be happy to meet in person. Yeah. And
oh, awesome. You're going to be out at Shop Talk too? All right, cool. We'll have to meet up when we're out there. So people should just get in touch with you through LinkedIn and give Alex a ping. All right, well, that wraps us up. Thanks to Alex Halkin of Competera for sitting down with us. And thanks to all of you for tuning in as usual. And on behalf of all of us at OmniTalk Retail, and on behalf of Alex and Ann and myself, as always, be careful out there.